Turn in your Bibles to Joshua chapter 1. Joshua chapter 1. We're going to do half a verse today. I'm going to talk to you about half a verse in Joshua chapter 1. We're starting a series on the book of Joshua. And we're going to be following the commander. We're following the commander. And we'll get to that in a few chapters, a few messages as we get into the book of Joshua. But this idea of following, this is what Joshua was. He was a follower. And so we'll look at that in the months and weeks to come. Today, in Joshua, in chapter 1, verse 1, it says, after the death of Moses. After the death of Moses. Let's close in a word of prayer. That's what we're going to look at today. Actually, we're going to be bouncing around throughout the scriptures today. But I want to look at who Moses was, and I want to kind of get you up to date, get us up to date, up to the book of Joshua in the course of history. So if you'd actually turn over to Genesis chapter 12, Genesis chapter 12, that's where we're going to begin today as we look at this study. Genesis chapter 12, this is what the Abrahamic covenant, the promise of God that he brings to his servant Abraham. Who was the first man, as we look at the Bible, who was the first man? Adam. And what is Adam famous for? Sin. It's kind of a bummer for Adam, huh? He got to be the first and he got to be the first sinner, right? And really the prototype sinner, right? And really the father of sin. Even if you look at the book of Romans, it blames all of our sin on our father. And thankfully, me being a father, it goes to my father Adam, not the father Kevin. But you can blame your father, you know, your father's name as well, for the passing down of sin. And so you have Adam, the father of sin. And then you see the unraveling, really, of humanity in the events that go on. And then you get to chapter 12, and I'm just taking a jump from Adam to Abraham. Chapter 12, this is what it says. And this is really this big event of history. It says, now the Lord said to Abram, who would later be his name changed to Abraham, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. I don't know who put it so succinctly, but it's been said over and over again that in the Abrahamic covenant or the promise of God to Abraham, there's three things: land, seed, blessing. Class, repeat after me. Land, seed, blessing. Okay? And as you think, and as we go through the book of Joshua, I want you to remember that. And even as we sang today about the Lion of Judah, this is part of the seed that from Abraham would come the one special one. From his family, from his line, would be the one special one through his seed. Who was it? It was Jesus. It was Jesus. And as you see the recorded events of the Old Testament, there's a marching on of the Abrahamic covenant of the seed of Abraham to Jesus, and really throughout history, we'll look back to Jesus and what he has done so that we would know. So his promise was to Abraham for three things: land, seed, and blessing. If you saw that verse 3, it says, I will bless those who bless you, and in him who dishonors you, I will curse. And then it says this, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Which countries is he talking about there? This is a trick question, right? Because it says all, right? And it's the United States. It's Pakistan and Russia. It's China. It's Chile. It's Mexico and even Canada. And even Canada. Even Canada. Can you believe it? You ever watch Parliament, how they do things in Canada? It looks a lot more fun. A lot more fun than the way we do things here. I don't know why, but look it up. It's really interesting. There's a lot more cheering and yeah. The picture here is this, that God's desire is he pulls Abraham out of all the people in the world at this time, and he says, I'm going to make something special for you. I have a promise for you, and it's a covenant. It's me promising with you. Most of you have been 5 or 6 before, and maybe you can remember back, and maybe you're on the playground, or you're playing with kids at the park, and you're 5 or 6, and you know, there's always that one kid who's trying to make his mark on the playground, and he's trying to tell a big story, and or maybe he's trying to say, let me go first. And then he puts something out there. He puts something out there, whether it be a story or, and then he says, I promise I'll do it. I promise. And the question that you should always ask at any age is, how good is a promise from a 5 or 6 year old? Right? Especially one who's trying to manipulate and work the situation to their benefit. This is the question as you look at God's promise to Abraham. How good is his promise? How good is the Almighty's promise to a man? And this promise, land, seed, blessing, it's not just about the here and now for Abraham. It's obvious that it is in generations to come. And so the question of his promise coming true depends on the one who promised it. And so as we think about this, when you think about Abraham, when you think about his promise, land, seed, blessing. In the book of Joshua, where you could say it's the book that where they go into the promised land. Now, think really hard. Put on your thinking caps, class. Why do they call it the promised land? Some of you are thinking too hard already. It's because it was promised. It's because it was promised. It's promised by God to Abram. And he says, I'm going to give you a special land. And by the way, it's the land that they're fighting over right now. The drones and bombs and things. That's the land. That's the land. And so we'll talk about that in the weeks to come as well. So what you have in Abraham is a promise from God to him that will go on generations, land, seed, blessing. Which brings us, and I want to skip over, you can turn there already, but I want to say some things before it. Genesis chapter 50, why don't you turn there. But before we get there, so we have Adam to Abraham, and then I want to say this. Abraham's generations go like this. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And as you look at them, you realize that God is working out his plan in the seed of Abraham. That Isaac was born at parents were very old. It was miraculous, his birth, and then his preservation of his life through the sacrifice that Abraham went to offer. Abraham, Isaac, and then Jacob. And then Jacob had sons as well. And that one son that we know of from the book of Genesis, those last chapters, a significant portion of the book of Genesis, is Joseph. And if you know the story of Joseph, he was the youngest son at the time, but a special son, a favored son. And because of that favor, and probably because of the way he acted, his brothers hated him. And he had special dreams given to him by God. And as God worked in his life, he sometimes shared these dreams. And these dreams were about his prominence and even his brothers coming and bowing down to him. And this repulsed his brothers. He hated them. They hated him. And as he came to check on them, his father sent them, they talked amongst themselves about how they would kill him. They would kill him. In fact, Judah was one of the ones that is highlighted in the hatred of his brother Joseph. And you know, they threw him in a pit, and I don't want to say, you know, cooler minds prevailed, but Reuben, I believe it was, that he was the one who suggested, hey, let's not kill him, let's sell him, let's sell him. And so they sold their brother into slavery, and their brother ended up traveling from where they were down to Egypt. And in Egypt, he was placed and sold into a wealthy man's home. And in that home, he got into some trouble. There was a dirty woman that chased after him and accused him of immorality. And in that, he ended up in jail. And so in that jail, he was there with others. And in that jail, he gained prominence. Once again, God's hand was upon him. And as he was in that jail, they saw that God was blessing him and teaching him things. And he was helping them. And then was forgotten again, and then finally he gets out, and as part of these dreams that he was able to interpret, he was able to lead and be put in charge of preparing for a famine that hadn't come yet. And because of God working in his life, he had amassed and helped Pharaoh amass a great storehouse of wealth that would help really save the whole region from famine. That was Joseph's life. Many years later, his brothers are sent by their father to go and to get provisions and hope to save their family from famine. And so they go, and unknowing that their brother Joseph was in charge, not recognizing him, they go before him and ask for his help as others had done. And then Joseph, through some events, he goes back and forth, and then he says, I'm your brother Joseph. And obviously in fear, they're fearful, but their dad's still alive, and so they go. And all this happens, and then finally the father dies. Finally the father dies, and the brothers say, oh no, he's just been holding his hand back. He's just been waiting for this opportunity. Now he will get revenge on us for selling him into slavery, for the way we treated him. But at the end of the book of Genesis, after Jacob's death, we get this account of the brothers coming before Joseph again. And they're fearful. But as we look down at verse 17, chapter 50, verse 17. And this was what they said that their father had caused them to say to Joseph. He says, say to Joseph, please forgive the transgression of your brothers and their sin, because they did evil to you. And now please forgive the transgression of the servants of God, of your father. They're saying, look, Dad told us before we have a message, you're supposed to forgive us. That's what Dad wanted. That was his dying wish. We communicate that to you. And so Joseph didn't care anymore, because his dad was dead and he took revenge on his brothers. You laugh because you know the story. If you didn't know the story, I mean, it seems logical, right? He'd waited his whole life, you know, and sometimes we know about bitterness, right? There's some people in your life where something happened when you were young, and you love to recount the story with passion. But this is what Joseph said. This is what Joseph said. Or this is what it says of Joseph. It says, Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Verse 18, his brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. But Joseph said to them, do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. Who was he talking about? Who was he? What were the people that were kept alive? Who do you think he was thinking of? Well, I don't know who Joseph was thinking of, but maybe you could even ask the question, who was God thinking of keeping alive? And I want to say this, that there were many people that were kept alive through Joseph's life. Joseph saved the whole region. Isn't that wild? That Joseph, God took him from here to the jail, to the Potiphar's house, jail, and then into the house, and then made a promise, these years of plenty, and then finally the famine, and what was Joseph's life all about? He saved many. Or God saved many through Joseph. And I want to say this, that it's obvious that Joseph's life was deeply affected by the evil of his brothers. He's deeply affected. And yet Joseph, as they come and they basically say, hey, well, we'll just be your servants, okay? Can we call it even if we're your servants forever? And Joseph wept and he says, am I in the place of God? I'm not God. I'm not the one you should be bowing down to. But then he says this very peculiar thing. He says, you meant it for evil, but God was at work in my life, but God meant it for good. And he could even see, he didn't see the whole picture, I'm sure, but he said this, he says, the saving of many lives. And undoubtedly, I can imagine the brothers would have said, my life, my life. But you see, Abraham had received a promise from God. What was the promise? Come on now. Land, seed, blessing, right? And who does the line of Christ come through? Which one of Joseph, right? No, at least not this Joseph, right? We're talking about this, and we'll get to that long time later. But what you see is this, that his brother Judah was the one of the line of Christ. And if you look a few chapters back and you go, who's he? You look at it, and it's pretty wild. It's chapter 49. And who gets the birthright? Well, it's the oldest, of course. Who's the oldest? Reuben is the oldest. Somehow he got skipped over, right? And then there's a couple other get skipped over. And then you're going, as they're getting skipped over, you go, he's going to go to Joshua, or Joseph. He's going to go to Joseph because that was his favorite. But it's Judah. It's Judah. And this is the plan of God. It's not the plan even of Jacob or Abraham. It's a promise of God to Abraham that he would, through Abraham, his seed. And so you get this beautiful picture that Joseph is placed in time and history and even sad events and evil events in his life so that he would play a role in what God is doing for the saving of his family, but the saving of the line of Christ, that would go on and continue on, and God would be faithful to his promise to Abraham. I can't help but stop here and just encourage you. What do you do with the evil in your life? What do you do with the hard things in your life? Is it okay to be bitter? Is it okay to say, I've been wronged, and everyone I bump into, I'm going to let them know. And life was wrong for me, and even tag it on somebody because of them, life is wrong. I want to encourage you, have the eyesight of Joseph as he looked upon the evil that was done in his life, that he would say, and maybe you won't see it. Joseph didn't see all of it. He just saw the big piece right there in front of him. The saving of many lives. The evil was there, but God used it to save many lives. I want to tell you, God has a purpose. He's working out his plan. And even the evil that goes on in your life is somehow part of his plan that he's going to work out for his good. For his good. So Abraham Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and I would say the next generation is Judah, Joseph. Judah, Joseph. As you look down at the end of chapter 50, looking at verses 24 and 25, this is what it says. And this is a transition. This is one, really, we don't see them as chapters, we see them as books, but it's really one chapter or one season being done. In verse 24, at the end of Joseph's life, this is what it says. And Joseph said to his brothers, to those guys that he talked to before, years later, and Joseph said to his brothers, I am about to die, but God will visit you and will bring you up out of this land to the land that he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph made his sons of Israel swear by saying, God will surely visit you and you shall carry up my bones from here. I think it's interesting that Joseph was mindful of the promise he made to Abraham, and he says, I'm getting ready to die. Don't leave my body here. Can I get up to the promised land? Promise me this, that you'll take my body up to the promised land. This is the end of the book of Genesis and the end of the story of Joseph. If you don't even have to probably turn a page, you're in the Exodus chapter 1. And as you look at Exodus chapter 1, the first 10 verses go like this. These are the names of the sons of Israel who came to Egypt with Jacob, each with his household: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan, and Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. All of the descendants of Jacob were 70 persons. Joseph was already in Egypt. Then Joseph died, and all his brothers and all that generation. But the people of Israel were fruitful and increased greatly. They multiplied and grew exceedingly strong so that the land was filled with them. Now there arose a new king, verse 8, there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, behold, the people of Israel are too many and too mighty for us. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply, and if war breaks out, they join our enemies and fight against us and escape from the land. So what happens in Exodus chapter 1, verses 1 through 10? It goes like this. All the family talks about it. They're down in Egypt now. Joseph was already in Egypt. Why was Joseph already in Egypt? Because he got sold, right? He got sold and he got brought down there, and so his life was down there. He saved him from the famine, and the rest of the family came down. There were 70 of them. That's a lot. That's a lot. But it's nothing compared to what's going to happen. And as God's blessing, and I would even say his miraculous blessing, they grew into a monstrous nation inside the nation of Egypt. So much so that the Pharaoh looked around and he goes, man, they're everywhere. And he was afraid of them. He was afraid of them. I want to say this, that point this out. In verse 8, it says, there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. Why does Joseph matter? Well, because in the previous, the Pharaoh that knew Joseph, the Pharaoh that trusted Joseph, he trusted him so much that he said, hey, you're in charge of everything. I trust you to prepare and to, I know that you're the guy. You take care of it. But Joseph had died, and there was a Pharaoh who didn't know of him, and so he didn't care of Joseph's family that was there, that was this huge nation within a nation. And so as you look at the end of chapter 1 and most of chapter 2, it shows about how this king, Pharaoh, God, they thought of themselves as God. It wasn't just that they were like a king, but it was like all the nation was meant to worship them and to provide for them. And you see this new Pharaoh, this new king, that he, in fearing this nation, that he begins to persecute them with hard labor and even the idea of killing the babies. This is how things went when they were down in Egypt. And it says something very interesting in verses 24 and 25. It's not just a transition. There's very important things in here to remember. But listen to this. In chapter 2, verses 24 and 25, it says this: "And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. God saw the people of Israel, and God knew," and God knew. Now, for the men here today, sometimes we struggle with our hearing. Especially it's our wife's voice. I don't know why that is. Like it's just a frequency or something that you can't hear. Maybe. And it's this idea that I see this among married people all the time. Not in my marriage, but in other people's marriages, where a wife will tell her husband something, and then days after will say it again, and they'll have a startled look on their face, and they say, "I've never heard that before." And you say, I told you. You didn't either. And there's this thing of like, you didn't tell me. It's because they can't hear. That's why. They can't hear. There's some interesting wording here when it speaks of God. It said, God heard their groaning, God remembered. I just want to tell you this. God's not hard of hearing. He doesn't need, he doesn't need something for his ear, hearing aid of some sort. He's not like that. Nor is he forgetful. I just forgot about that. When somebody says they remembered, most of the time they're saying they forgot and they just happen to remember now. What you see here is as Moses is writing, it's as if, and maybe you feel like this about this period of time that we're living in right now. It seems like things are just kind of going along. And they're kind of going along in a chaotic fashion. And people ask the question when they see chaos in the world, when they see war in the world, when they see wickedness prevail in the world, they ask this question, where is God? Where is God? Does he not see? Has he forgotten me? Has he forgotten me? I've been praying about this. Is he not hearing me? Is this a problem with God? And all I would tell you is this, a couple of things. These verses, these particular verses stand out as this transition between the chaos that's going on in Egypt and God working mightily. And it wasn't that he'd forgotten, but it seemed as though to people, to us, that God had forgotten, he wasn't hearing, and then all of a sudden he was. And this is what I would say. I think this is a good way to think of these verses. When God remembers, nobody else forgets. When God remembers, nobody else forgets. And he's always working. Why did it take so long? It was God's timetable. It was what he was doing according to what he thought was best. His plan, him working out his plan. And so we begin in really the end of chapter 2, beginning of chapter 3, to consider Moses. Consider Moses. I want to take, I'm sorry I'm doing this to you. It's a time where we can figure out where the books of the Bible are. But Hebrews, if you can go over to Hebrews chapter 11. And for those of you who, want to show your skills and stuff like that, what is Hebrews chapter 11? Hall of Faith, right? It's a list of those who showed faith, and is part of this list. And as part of this list, we have Moses. And in verse 23, chapter 11, verse 23, it says this: "By faith, Moses, by faith Moses. When he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw that the child was beautiful and they were not afraid of the king's edict. By faith Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. And then it talks about them leaving Egypt. We'll stop there. And the Passover as well, and people crossing over the Red Sea. So what I want to say about that is this, and you could look at Exodus, you can turn back there, chapter 4 we'll be in next. But what you see in the life of Moses is this, that he was one of those Hebrew babies that they were seeking to destroy. And as God would have it, that they hid him, and it was kind of a setup for Pharaoh's daughter, and they're hoping and seeing and God's blessing, and Pharaoh's daughter fell in love with this baby and then wanted some help, and so they went, and Moses' mom, but Moses grew up in Pharaoh's household as the daughter's son. But it says in Hebrews, as it characterizes his adult life, is that he would choose rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. Some of you say, well, what do you mean the fleeting pleasures of sin? Pharaoh's household. And I want to tell you, this is a very interesting passage on leadership here. We won't take time to look at it, but what kind of leader was Moses? He was willing to lead the poor people and abandon the palace. He was willing to be with the mistreated people because it was the plan of God that's what I need to be doing. You know, what is a leader? What is a leader? What is a president? What is a congressman and a senator? What is a mayor or a governor? And what is a good one? It's one who at cost to themselves, and even at the idea of taking a lesser position, goes and serves because it's the right thing to do. And for what God is doing, for the saving of people, that's what Moses was doing. He didn't care about the fleeting pleasures of sin, and it's not that it wasn't tempting to him, but he understood that there was something greater. And so this is where we think through that he is the leader of the Lord's people. Exodus chapter 4. So those first four books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And Exodus chapter 4 is really the story of Moses' life, or much of Moses' life, or at least his beginning. As we look at chapter 4, we see who Moses is. What was his personality? What was he like? I think often when we think of a leader is confident. A leader is articulate. A leader is tall. A leader has great-looking hair. I don't know, whatever else. Charisma. In Exodus chapter 4, verse 10, it says this. God is calling Moses. In verse 10, it says this. But Moses said to the Lord, Oh, my Lord, I'm not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant. But I am slow of speech and tongue. And then the Lord said to him, who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? So Moses was confident from that point on and walked with the Lord and led his people. No. What does it say? It says, now, therefore go, and I will be with you with your mouth and teach you what you shall speak. But he said, oh my Lord, please send somebody else. Somebody else. Someone else. Said someone else. You got the wrong guy. You got the wrong guy. And I want to say this, that most of the time that's what we say, right? We're fearful leaders, even in small things, especially when it comes to speaking with our mouth about the goodness of God, about leading others. And so as you look at this, you see this in the life of Moses. It says this, verse 13, it says, I'll read this again. But he said, "Oh my Lord, please send someone else." Verse 14. Then the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, "Is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know that he can speak well. Behold, he is coming out to meet you, and when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you both what to do. He shall speak for you to the people, and you shall and he shall be your mouth, and you shall be as God to him. And take in your hand this staff, which with which you shall do the signs." God was not pleased with Moses' timidity. He saw that as sin, and he was angry about it. As I look at this, I think it's important to remember and to not skip over these things. We'll see another time in a few moments of Moses' sin. And you think, well, he was a great leader. I want to be like Moses. I want to tell you, Moses was just like you. He had excuses. He had timidity. He had his own ideas that he thought were better than God. And so to be mindful of this, that even though he had exceptional birth and upbringing of his life, that he was called to be the leader of the Lord's people, he was also weak and timid and fleshly. And so it brings us, we won't go into these specifically, but maybe you can even just flip through these. If you look at chapter 7 in your Bibles, that what happens next, what happens to this, there's this conversation that Moses goes to the Pharaoh and says, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh responds, and what does he say? He says, "Who is God?" What a great question. "Who is God that I should listen to him and let his people go?" And I always like to say it this way, that God responded 10 plagues. And it wasn't response to the question, but it may have been a response like this: "I'm the God over all. I'm the God over all of creation, and including you. And this time concluded in the plague of the firstborn, and he instituted the Passover, in which as they sacrificed and as they did what God commanded them, that he preserved their firstborn. And yet the plague was that over the Pharaoh and his household and all those in the land. And then from there, there's the driving out, or the chasing out, and then the trying to kill God's people from Pharaoh's armies, and the crossing of the Red Sea, Exodus 14. And then in Exodus 20, another highlight, the giving of the Ten Commandments, the record of the Ten Commandments. I want you to turn over and, yes, this is the last passage I'm going to cause you to turn to. Numbers chapter 20. Numbers chapter 20. And this we see is kind of, I don't want to say the last big thing in Moses' life, but kind of the telling last event that marks the rest of his life. And I want you to ask about, in your mind, you know, what kind of guy was Moses, but also what kind were the people of God? What are the people of God like? What represents them? And it's easy to look at Numbers chapter 20 because that's in the Old Testament, right? A long time ago. And those people they're so different than us, right? Those people in Numbers chapter 20. They're from a different, country and time and place and race. They're just so different from me. These are God's people. And let's just read. Let's see what kind they are. Verse 2. It says, now there was no water for the congregation, and they assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And the people quarreled with Moses and said, would that we had perished when our brothers perished before the Lord. Why have you brought the assembly of the Lord into the wilderness that we should die here, both we and our cattle? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is no place for grain or figs or vines or pomegranates. Probably didn't even have avocados there. And there is no water to drink. That's the kind of people they were right there. That's God's people right there. And what can you character? Complainers, right? Complainers. Why'd you do this, God? Why didn't I get this? Why, you haven't taken care of me the way I needed to be taken care of. Verse 6. Then Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the entrance of the tent of meeting and fell on their faces. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, this is God speaking to Moses. He says, this is what you're going to do. Take the staff and the assembled the congregation, you and Aaron and your brother, and tell the rock before their very eyes to yield its water. So you shall bring out water of the rock for them and give drink to the congregation and their cattle. And Moses took the staff from before the Lord as he commanded him. Okay? And so everything's going to be fine, right? Verse 10. Then Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock. All good. This is following the plan. And he said to them, hear now, you rebels, shall we bring water for you out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his staff twice, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank and their livestock. And the Lord said to Moses, and Aaron, because you did not believe in me and to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them. I want to bring some things together for you here. That was Moses' sin. That was a recorded sin. And you say, what was the sin? I didn't get it. The sin was this. He was supposed to speak to the rock. He hit the rock twice, right? Not that it wouldn't have been bad if it was just once, but like it was twice. His method was not the Lord's method. And if you talk to Moses, I don't know what he would have said. He would have said, I just thought it would be more graphic and more like, be a better picture for them. Be more magnificent, just speaking to the rock. Maybe it wasn't as, it didn't seem right to him. But what did God say? He said, speak to the rock. And I think about that. I think about how Moses was, and I go, I do that. I have better ideas than God, I think. And he was called to obey, and he did his own thing. I think of those people. And I want to say this. What is God's promise? What is God's promise? Land, seed, blessing. And there's the land. There's the land. And he says, Moses, you're not going to take these people into the land. And some of you are going, does that mean God's not going to fulfill his promise? He is going to fulfill his promise, but not to this generation. And you get this amazing picture of God working out his plan, but with willing participants. Willing participants, willing to listen to him, willing to obey. Yeah, these first five books, ending with Deuteronomy, the book of Moses, or the books of Moses, it's really the book of Moses is one, it's his. It's recorded the Torah, the law, and it is chronicling these stories from Adam to Joshua, the promise of God of land, seed, blessing. I want to give you some takeaways. Before I do, I just want to tell you about a little bit about the Old Testament. Just two things to look for. And the first one we've talked about a lot already today. The Old Testament is God working out his plan in history. It's God doing that. And so as you read these stories of real people doing real things in places and, you know, families, and even, just remember this, the real story is God working out his plan. God working out his plan. The second thing I would tell you is this. It's a story, it's a history of God's relating or treatment of his people. And I would even say, his unfaithful people. How does God deal with his people when we wander? And so I think these two things we can be mindful of as we look at the book of Joshua. Let me give you a few takeaways for today. The first one is this. Just a man. Who was Moses? Just a man. Weak and sinful and fleshly and great because of God. And great because of God. We look at Moses as one of the greatest leaders of all time, not because he didn't have failings, but because God did a great work in his life. He was just a man. Secondly, our significance, purpose, and satisfaction. Our significance, purpose, and satisfaction. And as you hear those, you're like, I'd like all those. I'd like all those. Where does our significance come from? Where does our purpose and our satisfaction come from? And we're searching for it, and we live day in and day out grabbing for it. What can we do? How can we be significant? How can we find purpose? How can we find satisfaction? Let me finish it. Our significance, purpose, and satisfaction comes from our submission and participation in the plan of God. Our submission and participation in the plan of God. Where we get into problems is we want to bring glory to ourselves and do our own thing. But our significance, purpose, and satisfaction comes from our submission and participation in the plan of God. And then lastly, and we'll see this again and again in the book of Joshua, confidence and success comes from knowing God and knowing his promises. Knowing God, knowing his promises. Moses wouldn't have characterized himself as a confident person. Joshua, in a similar sense, is being called to do heroic things that he feels ill-equipped to do. But confidence and success comes from knowing God and knowing his promises. There's a beautiful simplicity of life when you know what's going to happen next. As you look upon maybe a small child looking upon their parents or their coach or their teacher, and their teacher said to them, hey, if this happens and this happens, you'll get this. And the little child raises his hand, or he talks to his parents and he says, when is this going to happen? And they say, not yet. And the child begs and says, you promised. You promised. And as I look upon the word of God, sometimes I become impatient like a small child. And I think that God is not coming through on his promise. And the reality is he's just not coming through on his promise in my timetable. If I know the promises of God and I know the character of my God, I can confidently go through my day. In anything. Church, join me in prayer. God, thank you for this time. Thank you for our time in the book of, just look at Moses' life, and also as we begin our study in the book of Joshua. I pray for each one here. God, I know that sometimes in our hearts we reject and we're like, nah, not for me. God, help us to see that you're over all. You're over all. You're over Abraham and Moses and all the offspring that they had and the generations. And you're over my generation and the generations before me and my family and the generations after me. God, help us to walk faithfully with you in our generation this day. God, you're good and kind. Thank you for your grace and mercy. In Jesus' name, amen.